C1B, 1 and 2.
Number 16B.
So, once we have established our basis for the age to come, and therefore we may even envisage the fact that we are considering a premature discovery, that the world may not yet be ready for this new paradigm shift, we then encounter usually that, what Mrs. Eddy shows here, as love as soul, namely that she shows that through sharp experiences and suffering, physical sense gives way to a higher sense and the unconfined sense is reached. Always we have noticed now that when Mrs. Eddy comes to love as soul, that she brings up always a similar subject. You remember how in the chapter on creation, at the point of love as soul, she was speaking there about that the pains of sense are salutary, that she began to see that there is no duality and that we must find a better interpretation for the pains of sense and see that they are actually positive, that behind it is a divine idea, the idea of love. So here too, at the same point of love as soul, she brings in now the point that she says, you know, love, that this new idea, love, will be so interested in you that love wants to bring you home to love and therefore will put you through the mill, so to say, if you don't yield easily. And therefore, if there are pains and pleasures of sense that don't lead anywhere and that they are bringing about what she calls here sharp experiences, she says, brings about disappointments, brings about ceaseless woes, all these things which we do not like humanly, she says, you must begin to like them divinely, because, she says, they all are here to turn us to the arms of divine love. That's something we would like. So we have to take in both and say, all right, then I must like the sharp experiences, the disappointment, the ceaseless woes, because they are angels' thought. They are ideas of love that come to us and wants to bring us out of the old paradigm. And we only go through these ceaseless woes as long as we resist the new paradigm, to accept the new paradigm. If we would accept wholeheartedly the new paradigm, there would be no suffering, there would be just the way of science. But she knows well enough the human mind, how the human mind doesn't give up so easily, that it is quite a job to instruct the human mind out of itself with science. But she says, that doesn't matter. Love finds another way. Love finds the way through disappointments, through ceaseless woes, to bring you back to the arms of love. Because what happens, she says, in that process of weaning, speaks about the process of weaning. What happens in that process? She says, it is a process in which we rid one's self of error. Well, that should be something nice, something positive, to feel we are going through a process of ridding oneself of error. It is a process which, she says, in which we forsake error of every kind. And she puts the accent on every, that's love. Love is total. Love is not halfway. It's the total commitment that love always asks. And says, therefore, it's asking also a total giving up of every kind of error. In that process of weaning, we lose the possession of any other consciousness but good. And again, we have that all-inclusiveness of God and that all-exclusiveness of error, which is always a tone of love. Love just wants to bring us home, and therefore she calls this process of weaning the wholesome chastisements of love. It's wholesome, but it's a chastisement. We don't like to be chastised, whereas we should see that it is wholesome. So that boundless thought, you see, boundless thought reaches the divine glory. Therefore we can see soul always wants us to free ourselves of everything that limits, that sets bounds. And love is working on us. Love's impact is constantly coming to us, trying to lift us out of boundaries, of having finite conceptions, finite beliefs, finite affections, finite purposes, finite aims, finite motives, to take us out of all that limits us and wants to give us all. And that naturally means that we leave the old landmarks, and the human mind doesn't like that. The human mind likes to stick it and would like to see the old landmarks to be fulfilled, and works to demonstrate for a fulfillment of the old paradigm, and it doesn't work. This is the chastisement of love. It is a terrific force. Love forces us to accept what best promotes our growth. It's a terrific force that says, I don't want you to go on in the old ruts. I don't want you to go on in a limited sense. I want you to take you out of it. Therefore, we must see that if we are at the threshold of a terrific paradigm shift, I mean always the period of 1,000-year period to the next 1,000-year period must be quite a terrific paradigm shift. It is not just a little change. It is a terrific change, a change that cuts right through everything. And therefore, we must also come up to expectation of what love wants us to do and be bold enough and strong enough and courageous enough to go through that paradigm shift. And in this way, we can really be a John the Baptist preparing the way for the next 1,000-year period, being able to lend ourselves to the idea so that we are used for the idea to bring about that final 7,000-year period, the millennium. There is some responsibility that lies on our shoulder. I always like to think of Paul. I mean, he lived in an age of a great paradigm shift. I like Paul, because I think without Paul, Christianity would have sunk, would have become a little Jewish sect. He was the only one that broke the limits of Judaism, because all the other disciples of Jesus, they, when Jesus had left, they went right back to the temple, they washed their feet, and they asked that everybody should first be circumcised before they can become a Christian. These Gentiles, they are so bad, they must first go all through the rituals of the Jewish belief before they can become a Christian. And Paul came along and said, you are talking nonsense. You haven't seen really what Jesus was trying to show. I go to the Gentiles. I see that the Gentiles are much more ready than you in your little temple and church business. The Gentiles are open, and I go to the Gentiles. He broke the old paradigm, that a new paradigm should come out of an old one. And without Paul, I don't think that Christianity would have survived. But he was willing to accept love's chastisements. He really went through everything. He even bragged. He said, I brag about all that happened to me, how often I had made shipwreck, how often I have been beaten up, how often I have put into prison, what all I have done. But he always said, I get up and go on again. And he said something else. He said, you know, we are not many mighties, but we can do it. He didn't have big people who would help him. Not the emperors, not the people in the courts, not the big lawyers. Nothing like this of that time would help him. He had to go to the churches, these little churches in Asia, and it said, oh yes, what are you? We are not many martyrs. You were robbers, you were thieves, you were homosexuals, you were all that things. You know, these sailors that came in and had a rough life, but he said, we can do it, we can do it. We have a new paradigm, Christ, and faith in Christ, and the grace of Christ, and we can do it. And think of it, if he hadn't had that small, unpretentious groups of people, nobody was really a big pot, a big shot in it, but he could do it. And I feel we have to see that too. We may not be many mighties. We have no presidents of a country among us, governors and big managers and things. They don't have the time anyway to study and to go along spiritual lines. We have to take those who are not many mighties, but they have a love for the spiritual, and the spiritual alone matters. This is a spiritual idea. And so whoever we are, you somehow should have a feeling that you are going to make history, and not say to yourself, I'm only a little housewife, something like that. I'm not important in this world. I always felt we should make history, and we can make history, because we are introducing a much bigger power than those that are mighty in this world. The power of a new paradigm that is spiritual, that calls itself divine science. And divine science is not dependent if we have a big job, if we do this or that or the other, are well known in the world or not. All depends on our consciousness. And I always somehow know that we are going to make history. I knew it right from the beginning in 1937. I knew that we are going to make history. That history will look back on this period as a challenging period where we have challenged the old paradigm, just as Paul has challenged the old paradigm of the Old Testament. And I said, I have been very in earnest about the old paradigm. I haven't been a sluggard in it. I was really quite hot in it. But then he changed, and he suddenly could see that he was considering the textbook he had, the Old Testament, that the textbook he had, that he was reading it wrongly up to that point. And that now with his new consciousness of the Christ consciousness, he could go back to the same text and showed that in the Old Testament there was already adumbrated the Christ idea, and that if we look right through that Old Testament, through the laws and the prophets, that you could see already the working of the Christ idea, and that the Christ idea was not something that was absolutely new with Jesus Christ, that Jesus Christ just was the fulfillment of that Christ idea that was constantly working beneath the law and the prophets, running right through the Old Testament, just as today we come and say to the textbook, we were reading that textbook of Christian Science for years and years and years with an atomistic approach, and we just could see in it atomistic truth, just single statements. And now with a new consciousness we can go back to the very same text without adding a word, without taking away a word, and see in the same text something completely new. And if we can do that, we introduce a new age. We introduce to that Bible and to the Christian Science textbook that had been able to stand for 3,000-4,000 years, we introduce it into a new paradigm and throw a new light on that whole thing, and therefore we can and will make history. But it may take here the point of love as soul, where we have to learn quite a bit in our lives, and that we make mistakes, that we may hold on to things that we shouldn't hold on, but if we trust and if we have a consciousness that love has an idea, a high goal, that love is a force that drives everything to that high goal, it will bring about such situations in the human that forces us to drop what needs to be dropped and to claim what needs to be claimed. Nobody, nothing can expect from us that we are absolutely holy. We are still what we are, but we have the vision of the idea of love as soul. And therefore, we can go through these experiences unharmed. That we can go through it and accept it and come out without the smell of fire on us. But it needs the willingness to accept what love presents us and what love wants us to drop in our consciousness and accept a higher idea. Therefore, she goes further to the next tone of love as principle and shows here, practicing what has been understood precipitates ultimate harmony. Now you can hear the tone of principle which says you have to practice what you know, you have to demonstrate what you know. It doesn't say you have to demonstrate what you don't know. We like to demonstrate what we don't know. We like to walk through the fire and jump out of the window unharmed and things like that and walk over the water. She says, I don't expect you to do that. I only expect you to practice that which you already know. That's love. So she said that we should put into practice what we already know because truth is demonstrable and that good is not understood until it is demonstrated. But let's be clear that we demonstrate the new paradigm and not the old paradigm, and that we demonstrate that sense of demonstration which the new paradigm asks and not what the old paradigm wishes. This is a big, big difference. So we are not going to demonstrate that what in the general Christian Science field is considered demonstration. We are not going to do that. We don't want to do that because we feel that that is not a high sense of demonstration. We feel that what we have to demonstrate is really the science of Christian Science and not the desires of people. What people desire, what people wish, what people are defining what has to be demonstrated. We are much more humble. We are really so humble that we say, let there be, let God do it, let God define what has to be demonstrated, and not let us decide what should be demonstrated. And what does she say how we should demonstrate? And she said, to be faithful over a few things, and that will make you ruler over many. Well, naturally, we can take this sentence and say, what are those few things? And each one can bring in his or her concept of what few things are, and be very happy that those few things which we feel we should use, that we use them. But I don't think that science leaves it to the personal evaluation what few things are. I think science has scientific criteria to define what those few things are. It doesn't leave it just to anyone to decide what he wants to demonstrate as few things and be happy and say, I have done it, so I have done all I could do. The few things that Mrs. Eddy hints here is that there are just a few things, 7, 4, and 4, and that's not much. That's very few things. And they alone make us ruler over many. If we take as few things something very little, it can't make us ruler over many. If we demonstrate just like a young soul to find his asses, then we also try to demonstrate something over few things. Who is caring today about a few asses? But if he demonstrates one thing, which he did, tried to do, namely that he goes up to the prophet, to Samuel, that he lifts up his consciousness to the one divine principle, then he was made ruler over the whole country. He was made king. Then he can rule over many, not only of that those little few asses which he was seeking. This is what we have to do in science. Let's therefore, be faithful, really faithful, over that divine system of reference. Our whole consciousness being geared towards that point of asking, what are the seven? What are the four? What are the four levels? How do they intertwine? How do they operate together? It's asking always only about 15 points, few things. But we can see now that that makes us ruler over many. It's so big, so few, because they are so fundamental that they open up the Bible, they open up the textbook, they open up being, they open up our true being. There is no other foundation on which we can build. So instead of straining nuts, a lot of little things, we really go and see what are the essentials, what are those few essentials that constitute reality, and really go down and see that we demonstrate those, to demonstrate mind, to demonstrate spirit and soul, a principle, life and truth and love, and that's something else than to demonstrate all the tiny little things that usually occupy our desires and our motives. She says, how do we put everything into practice which we already know? She says, use your talents. Use what you have. Use what you already have. And so leave the old for the new. And be glad to leave the old landmarks, to leave the old system of reference. These are the landmarks. What are the landmarks of a science? It's a system, and therefore the old paradigm. And then she says, this would precipitate the ultimate harmony. Can you see love? This is really that which will enable us to bring us, precipitate the development to the point of ultimate harmony. So always that big, big point, never to park one's old concept into something new once one sees something new. This is the great difficulty which we have in teaching this system to the people that come from the church, that naturally, it's absolutely naturally to see that they would like to see their old concept to be fulfilled in a higher way than what they had before. And that doesn't work. They are then disappointed when they come to us. Because what we want to do is to say, don't park your concept of Christian Science you had up to now into this new approach. We say, leave it behind. Leave the old landmarks behind. Just forget it. That's the best thing you can do. Don't be sorry that you spent 20 and 30 and 40 years on it. Don't be sorry about it. It's all right. You have done your best, just like Paul did. He said he spent all his energies on the old paradigm, and then he just dropped it in one moment and said, I turn towards the light. And then he's absolutely free and open for the new to break in. So this precipitates, he says, the ultimate harmony. Yeah. We make a break here. Yeah?